Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing sneakier scams targeting younger folks.
So, Joel, are you saying that even you, that we could fall prey to some of these different scams?
Well, maybe me, but you're pushing 40, so I don't know if you qualify anymore.
I'm a couple years older than you, it's true. That is what we're talking about today. We are talking about scams, and specifically how they're targeting younger generations, because oftentimes I feel like they're viewed as this thing that like, oh, I would never fall for that, or that's something that I heard my dad talk about one time, or my mom, or you know, my nana. She talked about this guy that she talked to one time, and he ended up swindling her out of a couple $100, that sort of thing. But no, these are scams that need to be on our radar.
Scams for the new generation.
That's what we should have titled this episode. But it made me wonder, have you ever been scammed?
So I fell for...
That you're aware of,
a very, very informal scam one time when I was, I guess, early 20s.
Did you have a girlfriend up in Canada or something?
I had like three girlfriends up in Canada. No, so this young...
And I was broke.
Young fella came up to my door when I was still living at my parents' house. I don't know, I was probably like 19 or 20. And he was selling stuff to raise money for school. And he was selling Blockbuster gift cards. This is how old that scam was. This was when Blockbuster was still around. To our Gen Z listeners, Blockbuster was the real life equivalent of Netflix. And so
a combination of Netflix and the library mashed together.
Right. And my penchant to get a deal, they were discounted. And so I got something like, I don't even remember, $25 worth of Blockbuster gift cards for the low price of $15. And I got to feel good that I was supporting his school fundraising efforts at the same time, but alas, I lost out on all the money I gave to him because it was a fake gift card with no money on it. So, enterprising young scam artist.
Had he printed them out himself, or like, what was the deal?
I know it's so long ago, I barely remember, but my family, we joke about it now.
Maybe they were expired and they were legitimate, and maybe
that could have been it.
Best case scenario, give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he didn't even know that they were expired and was just trying to make a buck.
But that's the only time I can remember where I got scammed, but it's still just like a humorous story to tell when we're hanging out as a family.
Nice, man. I don't think you've ever told me that or even shared that here on the show, but scams, dude, they're not going anywhere, and so I am glad that we're going to dedicate an entire episode to the subject today.
Can I ask you frugal or cheap before we get to it?
Sure.
Okay, so we are getting rid of a lot of old paint at our house.
All right.
I think everybody out there probably has.
Y'all kind of switched up the interior color of the house.
Yeah, during the renovations, and so we have a few extra cans paint that we want to keep on hand, but there's just a bunch of old paint, and owning multiple rental houses over the years, I've just had old paint cans stacked up for use at different properties, and so I've tried to now consolidate my colors to where I'm only using one color when I paint anywhere.
That's how you do it.
Yes.
And secondly, you keep the paint at the houses. Keep them in like a little Tupperware, like either in a closet or down in the basement, man. That's the way I...
All right, that's a good call. Maybe I should do that from now on. But for anybody who has old paint cans that they need to get rid of, you can't just toss them in the trash. That is toxic material that you can't just toss in with all your other trash items.
You can throw it away as long as it's dried.
Yeah, at least you put kitty litter in if there's not much left. But lots of times there's a lot of paint left in some of those buckets,
that's
right?
True. You switch color, so you have you probably have like half gallons left. But if it's an older can and you've used maybe most of it, you can just like pop that lid off, let it dry out. If that's the case, I know at least here in Atlanta, you can throw those away.
Okay. All right.
Regular trash.
But if you don't, and you got
tons of paint like Joel does,
as much paint as I have, you have to go to a place for specifically hard to recycle items. And there's a place here in South Atlanta called Charm, and that's where you can drop your stuff off.
I've heard about Charm.
Here's the thing, though. They accept up to 25 pounds worth of paint every visit for free, but then you have to pay per pound above that 25-pound limit. And so...
I think I know where this is going.
Am I frugal or cheap for making multiple Charm runs in order to avoid paying? And I did pay a little bit the first time because I was at something like 40 pounds as opposed to 25. But I'm not like weighing it by hand at home to make sure I don't go above the 25-pound limit. But I'm also not taking it all in one fell swoop so that I can at least take advantage of that free threshold a few times.
Well, Charm isn't too far, not only from where we live, but some of the other spots that we like to hit up. And so as long as you're not going out of your way to have to swing by there, which I don't think you are, because I know why you're heading down there, then I don't think it's that cheap of a move. If it was across town, say it was like, 20, 30 miles away.
With gas prices these days.
I don't even know if it'd be worth it now, actually.
And
now that I think about how much gas costs. But one of the other things I was going to mention maybe that's worth checking out is just like listing it on Facebook, either the, you know, like one of the Buy Nothing groups or just listing it locally, you know, for free. I remember
any of the paint that's still in good condition.
Yeah, if it's in good shape and you buy good paint. We both like that Sherwin-Williams stuff. And I feel like getting decent paint is something that we learned over the years too. If you go with the cheaper stuff, it doesn't really stick to the walls all that well.
Well, I think
as well as like super paint.
The top rated Consumer Reports paint is like the Behr Premium Plus, and it's still pretty cheap, something like $28 a gallon. And I don't know,
good.
With inflation, it's probably $100 a gallon now.
So,
but
so you don't have to get the really nice Benjamin Moore.
No, I don't think you do. I think, yeah, just read those Consumer Reports ratings. They'll help lead you in the right direction. But okay, good to know. I am doing the multiple runs to get rid of some of this paint, but maybe I'll post some of the nicer gallons on Buy Nothing Group.
So the reason I mention that is because one time when we were renovating a home, like this is maybe 5-6 years ago, did I ever tell you about the time that I sold a 5-gallon one of those big drums, like one of those big buckets of paint? It was a custom color that we already had mixed, and you can't return those. It's not like it was a base. And Kate and I, we didn't like the color. They started putting it up inside, and we're like, oh no, there's a chance we're going to live there ourselves. And so we wanted to make sure that we really like the paint color. And so obviously we couldn't return it, but I listed it, and somebody was glad to show up and pay a discounted rate for all of that paint because it was a popular color. It just wasn't right for us. So I wanted to mention that because there is hope for some brand new paint that you just can't take back.
Okay, good to know. I'll put that on my list of things to consider.
This isn't a paint episode, though.
No.
Let's move on.
Let's get on to the actual topic at hand. But first, the beer we're having on this episode is called Electric Venom. It's by a brewery called Little Cottage, just 15 minutes away from where we live here in Atlanta.
But it's worth a drive.
One of my favorite breweries. All right, so but let's get to scams. And scams, Matt, I say they're kind of like zombies. Did you ever watch the TV show The Walking Dead?
I watched a couple episodes.
Okay.
I didn't really get into it.
Basically, I only got into the first season. I thought the first season was really good, but I think they're on season like 10 or 11 or something like that now. I'm
still
surprised they have that much zombie content that they can cover. but basically, the reason I'm equating it to zombies, it's in that show, there are just a few remaining humans and there are hordes of zombies that are coming after them. And they've got to protect themselves, right? They've got to figure out a way to not get bit because then they too will turn into a zombie. And basically, you know, there's a never-ending litany of scams out there, just like there's a never-ending amount of zombies coming after you, which is why they can create double-digit seasons out of such a basic premise for a show. But you can never really get rid of all the scammers. And if these scammers spot you, they're going to come at you. And that means that you have to be prepared in order to avoid the most clever ones, because there's always a new scam. There's always a new tactic. And the only way that you can outrun them yourself is really through personal preparation.
That's right. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, zombies, they're always there, right? Because like when you're watching those shows, you know that at any moment, like one could just kind of like, you know, poke his head through the window.
Come out of the shadows.
it's sort of like this low-grade stress where it's just kind of constant. And I think that's true of these different scams. I think they're always going to be there, and there's always going to be these bad players, right? Like there's always going to be criminals who are looking to take advantage of us. And so I think this is why we wanted to talk about this today. And I did say criminals as well, because it's not just folks who are, they're not making the best decisions. It's like, no, like they're actually law-breaking criminals who are trying to steal your money. We're not trying
people with nefarious intent.
Yeah, we're not going to sugarcoat it here. But another problem here is that these scams, they're seemingly everywhere these days as well. They've gotten so good at targeting folks wherever they hang out. These scams, they're in your dating app. They're on Twitter. They're on TikTok. And it certainly feels like scams are, you know, like they used to be easier to spot, but they've just gotten so much more sophisticated over the years. And by the numbers, you know, it used to be the elderly who were most commonly susceptible, you know, for these scams and who had their money stolen. But that is not the case these days. People ages 20 to 29, they reported losing money to fraud more often the folks who are ages 80 and over. And so we're talking about young professionals. They're the ones now who are getting duped more often than their grandparents. Although it's worth mentioning, when older folks do fall prey to a scammer, they tend to lose more money with each scam attempt that they succumb to. But either way, that's quite the reversal that's happened in a short time span. So yeah, not only are they more ubiquitous, they are going after all the different generations now.
Yeah, that's right. And part of our reason really for creating this episode is because the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, they just released their list of top scams for 2021 for last year. The heavy hitters were identity theft, imposter scams, and credit bureau scams. And the FTC received 5.7 million reports in total And let's be honest, when someone gets scammed, they're not always reporting to the authorities. Whether it was successful or not, you know, whether they got taken advantage of, whether they ended up giving money to the scammer or they didn't. Either way, they're often not filing a report. And so, yeah, reported losses totaled $5.9 billion. And the average person lost something like $500. But again, since a lot of these scams don't get reported, the numbers are likely a whole lot higher than what the FTC is actually relaying, than what they have in their report. So yeah, on that note, if you ever are the victim of a fraud or a scam, we would say let the FTC know by heading to reportfraud.ftc.gov. That's just a good way for us all to kind of know what scams are most prevalent, how much money they're taking from people. It's just good knowledge that should be made public, even though I know for a lot of people, it feels like a shame-inducing thing that you got caught up in a scam. But we don't think that should be the case either, because they can really get anybody these days.
That's right. Yeah. And specifically via social media, because that's one of the main avenues for scamming these days, accounting for $770 million in just last year alone. Fake accounts, they're a dime a dozen. They're getting harder to spot. Actually, Morning Brew, they had this really interesting article about fake accounts pretending to be real advertisers on TikTok. You know, you think you're buying a flannel shirt from L.L. Bean, or maybe you're buying a new side table from Wayfair. But in reality, it's actually a scammer offering you a deal that's too good to be true. You don't actually get anything, but then you still end up losing that money. And dude, to be honest, like, I have real questions about the viability of the metaverse, given that, you know, Meta can't even curb scam artists and spam comments on Instagram. Just imagine an alternative reality where spam artists continue to run amok in the virtual world.
Yeah.
You know?
And no,
talking about ads that they can't even wrangle.
Every time we make an Instagram post, look at all the scam spam comments that happen to get posted on pretty much every post we create. Sometimes it's in the double digits, and Instagram can't seem to figure that out. I don't think that's a good sign. And yeah, I think for me, I'm not terribly bullish on the metaverse too, although I think it has some interesting sounding features. But yeah, if spam continues to be a major issue, people aren't going to want to hang out there. But it's also important to mention how scammers ask for money. That's changed a lot too in recent years. You know, there's Venmo, Cash App, Zelle, PayPal. All of those apps have made it just so much easier to steal your money. And so, yeah.
The medium of exchange has become something that's as easy to send as like a text message.
Yeah, instead of like physically having to lift your wallet out of your back pocket, there are much easier ways now
to write a check.
Yeah, access those funds. And so it's become a lot harder to track that criminal down in the modern day of digital payments. And then different cryptocurrencies, they're quickly becoming a common way that these scammers ask to receive money too. And because the way we send and receive money has changed just so much in recent years, it means that you got to be on your toes even more before you send someone money, before you transfer any funds to somebody that you don't know.
That's right. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the most common scams and how they work. Scams in the realm of finding love online, they've kind of dated back almost, you know, like as far as the internet. But the FTC stats show that romance scams rose nearly 70% last year. A lot of times you're already in a particularly vulnerable position already. You know, if you've created an online profile, you're entering into these sensitive conversations with strangers. Well, scammers, they continue to flock to every iteration of dating apps to try to take advantage of folks there. The New York Times, they just ran the story about crypto scams on apps like Hinge. As more people seek to find love online, the possibility to get taken advantage of has grown exponentially. One telltale sign that you might be getting scammed is if the person you're talking to tries to move the conversation to WhatsApp, which encrypts every message that gets sent. And another sign is if you get asked for money in any way, any form, any fashion. But oftentimes these folks are looking for cryptocurrencies. The scammer will often make it sound like they're trying to help you to invest your money. But in reality, they're really just taking your money.
You know, let me teach you how to invest in Bitcoin. And then you send some over and then they show you a website where it looks like, look at your money going up in value. This is incredible. Exactly. You should send more. And then it turns out that money is in their hands, and the website they're pointing you to is actually fake. And it just makes me think of the old saying, Matt, love is blind. And in the case of some of these like romance scams, love is blinding. And it just causes you to not see what's actually in front of your face when people are asking you for you to transfer money their way. You start thinking the best of this person because you've been chatting back and forth for weeks or months on end, and you trust them.
Totally.
But the reality is you've never seen their face, and you have to continue to proceed with more caution.
Yeah. Well, I think this is like, first of all, this is just such a sad thing, right? Because first of all, not only are you not having your money grow in ways that you think it should be growing, but you're actually having your money taken away, right? The second strike is the fact that not only are you not finding someone who is like your soulmate, Like, you found somebody that who's trying to, like, damage you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, they're trying to harm you in a financial way, at the very least. It's like this double whammy. And because of the pandemic, it's like this perfect storm. Because, obviously, cryptocurrencies have been crazy hot over the past 2 years. There's been a lot of interest in those.
It's hard to meet somebody IRL.
Exactly. And then on top of that, folks are dealing with just huge amounts of loneliness. And so you combine those two things together, and you have a very vulnerable population.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And because it's someone that you've gotten to know and trust over that period of time, you're susceptible to lose even more money in these scams. I think some of the people who fall victim to a romance scam can lose, you know, all, up to their entire fortune, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars,
because
they've developed this relationship built on trust, so the stakes are high. So be warned. We would say don't send money to someone you truly don't know. This is, of course, one of the massive downsides to online dating. But after the break, we're going to get to a really common scam that almost anyone with a kind heart could fall prey to. It's basically digital pickpocketing, and we'll discuss that and more right after this break.
We are back. We are talking about the proliferation of scams. And Joel, let's get to the one that you just mentioned before the break, digital pickpocketing.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it, man. This one's been around for a minute here. Listener Gary, he actually sent us this article from his local TV station in Savannah. And this one involves the different digital payment apps. Basically, someone comes up to you. This one takes place in real life. They come up to you. They ask you to borrow your phone, maybe to make an important phone call. Maybe their phone has died, or maybe they don't have their phone at all. Sometimes in this specific story, it was a kid.
Which is something you can identify with. We've all had our phone run out of battery.
Exactly. And you, being a nice person, you hand them your phone to make that quick call. I think a lot of decent human beings would probably do that. But then, you know, what do they do while your phone is in their brief possession? Well, they open your PayPal or like Venmo, Zelle, Cash App. That's another one too, where they make a quick transfer to their own account. They hand your phone right back to you. They say thanks and walk away. And it's not until later that you find out, you know, like via email or when you check your statements, that you have lost money. The lady that they had interviewed for the story was standing right there. She was talking about how she was just feet away. And the kid even had it on speakerphone. And she was watching him. But then he had asked her if he could pull up maps. And so he was kind of messing with the phone. She saw him actually messing with it. And with some quick fingers, he got away with a few $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what the lady in that article lost $3,800.
That's right.
In just a minute or two to this young kid. And then she didn't find out till later when checking her bank statement. And so, yeah, if this happens to you, if someone comes up to you and asks to borrow your phone, we would say it sounds unkind, but just to say no, to not give your phone over to anybody. Offer to dial the number yourself and to put it on speakerphone for them.
Yeah.
Also, yep. Enable stuff like Touch ID. There's technology to help us with this stuff, right? Or Face ID for these apps to make it harder for someone to get in there to mess with your money.
Dual, I love Face ID.
Yeah, dual factor authentication is another one. I have fingerprint ID on my Google Pixel 4a for all those apps. But yeah, that's one of those things where even if you just left your phone sitting around and the screen was unlocked or something like that, someone could get in and easily steal money from you. So yeah, you want to make sure you have the technology set up and you just don't like give your phone to random people who ask to borrow it.
Totally. Dude, and I will say this is one, when I read this story, I was just like, good thing I've got Face ID already turned on my phone, which I do, you know, as far as unlocking the phone. But I would have sworn that I also had it set up on some of those different apps. I checked earlier today as we were getting ready for this episode. Nope.
Oh, snap.
I went to PayPal, Cash App, and Venmo.
Turned it on.
All three of them, they weren't locked down, which is crazy.
Can I borrow your phone for a second?
Oh, my God. No, you can't. But it's just crazy to think that, like, I'm not somebody who goes in and customizes all my different settings, right, normally. And so I guess, like, what I'm saying is that what that tells me is that is the default option when I know that there are some other apps. Like, for instance, I know my Ally Bank app, which I've been with Ally for years. They have always had the Face ID. Like, I distinctly remember that one. I think it may have been the first app ever that required me to, you know, acknowledge the Face ID thing. But I wanted to mention that because it is super easy to turn that on once you go into the actual app. You go to your account, your profile, and then you just go down to the security settings and turn on, you know, at least on the iPhones, Face ID. Sometimes they'll prompt you to enter in a little PIN. But now I know that I'm totally secure. So.
Yeah. There you go. I love that. Yeah. And that's just a good warning to everyone else who thinks maybe, oh, yeah, I believe I do. But go in there and check because.
Nope. probably not.
Yeah. You want to make sure it's on. And yeah, so that's definitely one of the scams that's been kind of making the rounds. And that can affect especially young people. It's like, oh, hey, I got to call my mom or a friend and my phone died. Like that seems like one of those innocuous asks. But in reality, it leads to you losing potentially thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about another scam, Matt. We talked about multi-level marketing schemes back in episode 254.
That's right.
We didn't have very much good to say about them back then. And yeah, we
talked a lot of trash about LuLaRoe.
Yeah, we did. We did. And that documentary came out on Amazon and documented even more of the oddities happening in that organization and how many people just thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of women who got ripped off, who lost a lot of money in that organization. And and most of these MLMs are actually pyramid schemes, which we put in the same camp as scams. And they are, in actuality, too good to be true. And really only a handful of people make any money.
Yeah.
The only real way to make money in a pyramid scheme is to recruit other people to sell things underneath of you. And the item that's being sold, it makes it seem like there's this legitimate business opportunity, but nobody really makes money that way in these organizations. And so, in fact, the FTC says that less than 1% of MLM participants actually end up making money.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the vast majority of folks that participate, they end up wasting a lot of time. They put forth a lot of effort, and then they lose a good bit of money. And they often end up hurting some of their friends along the way, too, because, yeah, that you're being told to recruit more people, and then you can damage relationships in the process of trying to, yeah, pursue being in a MLM, too.
Yeah, not only have you ridden them hard to actually buy that product, but now you've roped them in to the scheme that they can't escape. we've got to bring up imposter scams as well. These types of scams are on the top three on the Federal Trade Commission list. It's where, you know, someone, they call you to tell you that you owe them money, and if they do it well, it's easy to think that maybe I actually did just forget to pay a bill. Well, an imposter can call you, you know, they might email you posing as a representative from either the government or from a company. But the thing is, first of all, government employees, they don't do this. You'll never get a call from the Social Security Administration or from a local government agency demanding payment of fees or taxes. You also won't get a call from a government agency requesting any personal information, because guess what? They already have that information. They're not asking you for it.
Yeah, it's like, I'm from the Social Security Administration, but I'm going to need your Social Security number real quick. It's like, wait, aren't you supposed to have that?
It's like, what kind of incompetence are we dealing with here? but scammers, like, they're going to assume the role of a government agent, you know, whether via email, text, or phone call, and they're going to attempt to freak you out in order to make some quick money. Oftentimes, it is done over the phone, because when they have you on the line like that, they can create that sense of urgency, and that's a lot of times when we can make some poor decisions.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about IRS scams, because that is an imposter scam. That's a form of imposter scam, mm-hmm. And particularly since we're in the middle of tax season right now, we'd be remiss not to mention this one, because it's going around in a big way. And there are a number of different IRS related scams out there. And the pandemic actually seems to have created an even larger variety of these scams, largely because of like stimulus payments and extra unemployment benefits. A lot of people have been targeted because maybe they were a recipient of one of these things, or they thought they should be. And so, lo and behold, a scammer comes in, sends an email, and tells you there's a stimulus payment waiting or there's additional unemployment compensation, and you click the link and you fall prey. But Matt, like you just said, it's important to know that the only way the IRS legitimately contacts people is via snail mail, like through a traditional letter in your mailbox. And so, yeah, if someone from the IRS tries to get in touch with you via some other method, we would just encourage you not to respond, because it's fake.
That's right. The utility scam, that's another popular imposter scam. This is when your water, your gas, your electric company, they might call you to tell you that you're months behind on your bill. You better pay up. And you better do it quick. Otherwise, your power is going to be cut off. That sounds like such a hassle. And so because of that, so many people go ahead and decide to pay there on the spot. Sometimes the fake utility company will tell you to go buy a gift card. And the reason is because if you pay them with a gift card, those funds can't be traced. It's like paying with cash, basically. And some might even go the opposite approach, saying that you have overpaid, which sounds nice. And so when that's the case, just give them your bank account number, and then they can send you that money back your way. You didn't overpay, and you don't get your money back. So be warned of the utility scam.
That sounds like that Blockbuster scam I fell prey to. It's like, hey, it's, you know, you feel like you're coming out ahead and you're doing something good, or or whatever, and it ultimately in the end it comes back to bite you.
That's right.
But and I actually had a friend, Matt, who fell victim to the utility scam where the electric company called him at his place of business, and they said, like, your power is
classic
just about to be shut off. Stay on the phone with us. Go get a gift card. Send us that information.
Aren't you going to be embarrassed?
Yeah. And then they
think about all the customers.
The thing is, when a scam artist gets you once, which they got him once, they try to get you again. But
oh
by
gosh.
Then, hopefully, not always,
you
but hopefully
up.
You know. And he wised up the second time around. He realized he'd been had. But that is one of those nefarious things, especially for someone who has their own business, because they can't afford to be shut down. They can't afford for the power to be shut off. Their livelihood is at stake. If you own a restaurant or just any place where people come in to do business, like, that could throw a whole wrench in your day or week. And so, yeah, that is something in particular for business owners to be aware of as well.
Yeah. And that's another reason, too, why we'd always recommend for you to go straight to that company's website. Don't do it over the phone. Don't click any links in your email. Go directly to the website that you know to be legit, or go straight to the government website, straight to the .gov website. Don't click the links in your email.
Yeah, totally. All right, let's talk about something else. Let's move on from imposter scams. There's charity scams happening all over the place too. And so, yeah, fake nonprofit donations are just a terrible version of a scam. Really frustrating to see. These often happen after a natural disaster, or it's like support the victims of this and such tornado or hurricane. And you know, but not just that, like, scams have already happened invoking their Ukrainians and supporting their cause.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of websites that have already gone online generically promising to funnel your funds to support the efforts over there and
have
to support individuals.
The Ukraine coin, like, that's one of the, like, it was a crypto scam, basically, purporting to support the people of Ukraine.
I mean, it's just heinous that people will take advantage of something like that happening internationally or locally in an effort to steal your money. But it happens, right? And it happens all the time. And they just want to take advantage of your generosity. But really, it's just terrible people who are trying to, you know, use this conflict for their own gain. And so, yeah, if a cause that you would like to donate to comes on your radar from a plea you've read online, that's okay. But we would say don't click that link to give, and instead let that lead you to research different organizations who are doing great work in that area. Only give to organizations that you know, that you've vetted, that you trust. And Charity Navigator and Charity Watch are just both excellent sites that rate charities, and they show you how those charities use the dollars that you donate. So we would say go there, type in the name of the charity. Does it even come up? If not, that's a huge red flag. And if it does, you can find out more about how they actually use the funds that they receive, and it can give you a greater peace of mind before you actually, you know, click the button to donate.
That's right. And I think I just said Ukraine coin. It's actually Ukraine token.
Okay.
And so you're probably like,
I'll avoid both.
Yeah, either way, avoid both of those. But we're going to get to a couple more scams. We're going to talk about some sound general advice, regardless of the scam that you might come across. And we're going to get to all of that right after this break.
All right, Matt, we're back. Let's keep talking about scams. And yeah, in just a little bit, we're going to get to some general advice, just kind of a few takeaways that will help protect you and your assets from the vast majority of scams out there. But let's detail just a couple others first. One of them, and especially right now in a hot job market that is making the rounds, are employment scams.
I've heard of those.
Yeah. And a lot of How to Money listeners have benefited from this hot job market. Some people have told us that they have doubled their income in just the last few months, which is incredible to see.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, you know, don't let this scam cause you to avoid applying for jobs, because there are a lot of legitimate opportunities for you to make a whole lot more money out there. But yeah, employment scams have been around for years, and the listings on these jobs can appear on legitimate job hunting websites. And in fact, a report from the Better Business Bureau revealed that Indeed.com, which is a place where people go to find legitimate jobs all the time, was plagued with just a huge number of job scammers in 2020. And so the application that you're being asked to submit, it often asks for personal information that shouldn't be required for a first phase interview. Stuff like your social security number or your bank account information. We would say never, ever.
Your mother's maiden name, perhaps.
Yes, exactly. What's your password to Gmail? I mean, those are the kind of things.
Your first pet's name while we're at it?
Yeah. Yeah. What's your Vanguard login information? We would say never give.
What are your first four favorite numbers that just pop in your mind?
Right. That sensitive information is stuff that you definitely do not want to bring to the table to someone that you just just met through a job interview website. That's a massive red flag when they're saying, like, you know what, you seem like you'd be a good candidate. Tell me everything about you.
I feel like we would, it sounds like we would make good scammers, Joel, is all I'm saying.
Well, now we know all the tools of the trade, I guess.
It's true. We know how it works. And the thing is, too, with the different employment scams, they can kind of shake out in different ways, right? Some scammers, they'll use job positions like mystery shoppers. They'll use these vague positions like work from home opportunities to find their victims, because guess what? Anybody can do that. And so they're casting their net really wide in that case.
Yes, like jobs doing with shipping or drop shipping. That's another common job description term that often has some sort of scam element taking place.
Totally, yeah. But one of the common forms that these scams play out is that you will receive what looks like a legit paycheck in the mail after accepting one of these completely bogus positions. And then your quote-unquote boss, they say that you were overpaid. Hey, sorry, could you send back a portion of that check? And then the problem is, even though that check cleared your bank, it looks like that money is in your account, but it actually isn't. The paycheck, it bounces. And then guess what? You've already sent your real money back to that scammer, and then you're out all of that money. And so make sure to do your own diligence here. Make sure that you research any supposed company that is offering you a job. Another way that this plays out as well, it's not just that first paycheck, but sometimes, you've signed the line. They're like, you're hired. You're going to be making six figures. However, there is a pretty lengthy training process, and you're going to need some supplies. You're going to need a new company laptop, because you are not allowed to do business on your personal laptop. They send you a link to a portal where you pay for all of these expenses yourself, but you know it's going to be worth it because of those six figures you're going to be raking in. This is just another way that they get legitimate dollars out of your bank account without offering you anything.
Yeah, seems like a drop in the bucket compared to the just sick paychecks you're going to be pulling home in the near future. And it turns
sick
out
paycheck, raw.
It turns out those, you know, $1,000 or more is just gone immediately.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about like scam adjacent sort of ripoffs too, Matt, because sometimes I think, you know, there are clear cut scams. A lot of the ones we've covered so far are just these clear cut, tried and true scams that have been happening for a long period of time. But sometimes it's not necessarily a full fledged scam that's happening that you get taken with. It's just an inferior product or service. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the ways that people lose money these days don't always involve someone actively trying to steal money from you while not giving you anything in return, and they're just completely pulling the wool over your eyes, trying to trick you. Sometimes people are selling a somewhat legitimate product or online course, and you know, they're not trying to completely rip you off. They just don't really have your best interest in mind, and they're
right,
overselling
yeah.
something that is actually kind of a piece of crap. It's a turd on the back end, and so they're looking to make a living in the shady corners of the internet, basically. It could be advice that you're getting on YouTube or TikTok, as we mentioned earlier. There are a lot of scams on those platforms. A lot of people pitching something that actually isn't good for you. You know, online courses are a dime a dozen. And Matt, you and I know friends in the personal finance community who have really good online courses
yep.
that cost a pretty penny, but those people get almost like a mini college course in how to invest in real estate or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
High-end videos with a lot of accompanying material that is actually really helpful. But then there are a lot of other people who are selling courses that are complete trash, where you can get that information for free really easily, and they're not giving you anything special. And depending on the method of payment, there's no way to get your money back. And
right.
so, yeah, you just have to be careful. You have to tread lightly. Even when we're not talking about full-fledged scams, there's still a lot of ways to lose your money or to spend it ineffectively, you know, on the internet.
That's right. And sometimes, too, it's not even inferior products, because like you kind of were targeting just courses that are kind of crappy. It's just I think it's the first time we've ever said turd on the podcast before on the back end. But sometimes they are legitimate products, right? Like I'm specifically thinking about Cutco knives. Those are legitimate knives. Like, you know, they've got like these lifetime warranties. You can send them in to get sharpened. But so much, like, it just makes me think of sales, just more broadly speaking. And anytime you're dealing with a salesperson, you need to sort of look at things through a slightly different lens, because in this case, like when we're talking about knives, it's not that those aren't good knives, but if you're somebody who already has 24, 25, 26 knives in your drawer at home, you don't need another butcher's block full of, you know, like a knife set or whatever. And so it comes down to whether or not you need that as an individual. And that's where it takes a little bit of wisdom to determine, you know, am I just being swayed by this persuasive conversation? Do I like this person? Do I want to help them? Or is this something that I actually need? That's something that we all just need to weigh in our minds when we're having these conversations with people.
Yeah, that's true. I think that they talk about whole life insurance as being an item that is sold, not bought. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's high pressured sales tactics oftentimes that leads people to get that product when they would be much better served by having term life insurance. Matt, I had a listener reach out recently, and she is very young with no dependents, no kids. She's not married. And she said, hey, I've got this whole life insurance product. I'm starting to get concerned after listening to some of your episodes. And I was like, you're right to be concerned. And she started to push back. And so she's thinking about ditching it. And she doesn't even need term life insurance yet. Maybe in the near future, she will. We'll see. But yeah, those are the kind of things where there are a lot of things out there that are sold, not bought. If it's something you didn't go out searching for and someone pitched it to you, you have to do some extra thinking to see about whether it makes sense or not. So let's give some general advice, because we've listed a lot of popular scams, but there are just a few things where if you were to implement these, they would make you not necessarily like scam proof, but scam resistant, right? I'm thinking about a rainproof jacket. If it's water resistant, it's going to hold up pretty well, right?
Yeah, it's going to be much better than like that fleece you're wearing.
Exactly. That's going to get drenched in a heartbeat. But the first thing, right, the general way to protect yourself is to know that if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And so, a scam artist is often going to make a guarantee. You know, it's meant to give you some assurance that the money you're about to hand over will be taken care of. But really, that guarantee is fake peace of mind. We would say to trust your instincts and to not give someone your hard-earned money just because they offer verbal assurances. And really, lots of times, Matt, this is just like a gut check. Like, it sounds really nice. Like, obviously, I want this to be true. But if you had another friend that happened to and it was actually real, like, have you ever heard of this happening in the real world? Those are the kind of filters you need to run this pitch through before you sign on the dotted line.
Totally. We want to recommend for folks also to freeze their credit. This is something that we've advised for years now, but freezing your credit with all three of the major credit bureaus is worth doing, even if you think that you couldn't possibly fall for one of the scams that we've talked about today. By the way, I hope we've actually made it clear that you can actually potentially fall for one of these. But we've got an article up on the site that we'll link to about doing a credit freeze. Really, freezing your credit, it's sort of like using a bike lock. That is most def the cheapest and smartest way to make sure that your bike doesn't get stolen. You know, not using that simple tool is putting yourself at unnecessary risk. And the same thing is true with the credit freeze, right? It just takes a few minutes, it costs nothing, and it provides a lot of protection so that someone doesn't open up credit in your name without your knowledge or without your consent. You don't want to become an identity theft victim. This is one of those instances where you're not being parted with your current dollars, you're just being parted with your future dollars. And that's basically what debt is. You don't want to owe IOUs either.
Right, yeah, exactly. IOUs that somebody else had the fun of spending that money, mm-hmm. but you're on the hook to pay
exactly.
the bill. And so, yeah, like you said, Matt, it's just so ridiculously easy. Like, why would you not do it? And all right, I think another thing that we need to know, another way to protect yourself, is to realize that scams can often come from someone who you're somewhat close to. This is called affinity fraud. It's kind of tough to come to grips with because you don't want to be suspicious of everyone who's close to you. Like, oh, is my best friend trying to scam me? Or my grandma, like, what's her problem? Why is she trying to get my money? Like, usually...
GG.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to talk to you anymore. But it is important to note, though, that it's not just criminals stalking strangers on the internet. And many people have and continue to use race, religion, and age as a tool to connect with you and to part you from your money.
Yeah.
Or in the case of MLMs, it's often friendship that gets you in the door, right? It's like, come join me in this opportunity. It'll be fun. And you know, you just trust your friend instinctively. And so you decide to jump on board. But we would say, don't just assume that because you know someone or you share the same faith with that person, that their pitch is infallible. And here's the thing too, Matt, I think sometimes people feel the need to respond antagonistically if they feel like that pitch is not appropriate for them and they want to tell their friend all of the reasons that this is actually made up gobbledygook. But I don't think you necessarily have to, right? You don't have to right all the wrongs of this world necessarily. You can just use a simple response like, hey, I'm glad it's been good for you, but I've already got too much on my plate. And that simple response might be like, okay, cool, I guess they're not interested. There's just no need to argue the merits with someone who has drunk the Kool-Aid, because that doesn't always work out. It's like a protracted conversation where maybe you create some bitterness in that friendship.
That's true. Something else that we'd recommend for folks as well is to take your time when you are considering a financial opportunity. And also make sure that you're doing your research as well. But scam artists, they will almost always use time to their advantage. Sort of like what we were talking about earlier about being, you know, once you're on the line, once you're on the phone, they are not going to want to hang up. They're going to want to get you to head to the store, buy those gift cards, that sort of thing. Same thing with a utility scam that we talked about earlier. That involves you having to give them money immediately. It's just this shrewd tactic because it's harder to make a smart decision when you're under the gun, when you're in a pressure cooker, right? So do your research, take your time, and don't let any claim that you need to make a decision now or being told that the opportunity, it'll be gone forever. Don't let those tactics lead you to act impulsively. What's so difficult, you know, like you're talking about how, like, you don't want to be suspicious of every relationship in your mind. Like, that's what's so crazy about a lot of these scams is that it does involve some sort of relationship, right? Whether that's the trust you have with a certain company, or whether it's because, oh, yeah, I'm acquaintances with this person, I kind of know them. Or even if it's somebody that you think you love, right? Going back to the different dating apps. Scammers target all those different kinds of relationships, whether it be with a brand or with someone who's closer to you, to take advantage of you, to part you with your money. And so it's difficult because what we're saying is, like, you got to be on alert. But don't be so on alert that you're just this crazy person, right? Like you don't want to live in the equivalent of a bunker when it comes to your relationships where you're just hunkering down. But we do want you to think twice anytime you are faced with some of these decisions. Just give pause and think twice before you take any actions.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that you don't have to be paranoid.
Yeah.
But I feel like someone could listen to most of this episode and be like, I should probably be paranoid because...
Is there a zombie behind me right now?
Everyone's
right?
out to get me. And so, yeah, I should get my shotgun out and kill all those zombies. But, you know, I will say I don't personally live in fear of internet con artists or that someone close to me is going to try to steal my money from me, right? I'm not like lying up awake at night, one eye open, watching my wife sleep, just in case she's going to try to scam me out of something, right?
She's going to try to sell me some knives.
Or some whole life insurance. What's her problem? But I think the goal of this episode, it really is to raise awareness and to highlight the fact that even intelligent people like our listeners, because yep. if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, you are a smart person. And anybody, even you, can fall victim for a scam. And at the same time, scammers are getting savvier. You know, they're making those scams more difficult to identify. There's just no foolproof way to avoid getting scammed completely and to assure that you'll never get scammed for the rest of your life. But, you know, if scams are like zombies in The Walking Dead, Matt, then I think we'd all be remiss to not carry a shotgun and take some of the steps that we just outlined. Like, you want to make sure that you're prepared. Do those simple tasks that we just outlined, and hopefully it will make you scam resistant. That's our goal.
That is right, man. Let's go ahead and get back to the beer that we enjoyed during this episode. You and I, we shared a crowler of Electric Venom. This is from Little Cottage Brewery. And I will say, with it being in a crowler, you and I, we both got a full 16 ounces. I'm pretty sure John filled this thing like up to the brim before he gave it to you. But man, how much pineapple juice do you think is actually in this thing? Because
I feel like there's more pineapple juice than beer, almost. Like...
That was the first thing I could smell. We could crack the, first of all, it's a crowler, so when you crack the top, it's like you're opening a drum of oil or something like that. But yeah, as we poured this, I was like, holy cow, like the amount of pineapple fragrance was definitely noticeable. And as you're drinking it too, it's the first thing I noticed, but it wasn't like over the top. It wasn't so much that it was like that it overwhelmed the senses, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't too perfumey, I guess is what I'm saying, because there was a lot of actual fruit flavor within the beer. Because a lot of times I get turned off if like the smell doesn't match up with the flavor, then something's wrong. And we've had beers like that before where the fruit flavor, it almost felt artificial. But this, I feel like there's nothing artificial about this pineapple.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like biting into a giant pineapple like it's an apple. That's not how you eat pineapple.
No.
Nobody does that.
You gotta like cut the exterior off.
If you do that, you're like bleeding.
Cut it into cubes.
Does your mouth get tore up if you eat fresh pineapple? Like, because it's kind of like, I don't know if it's what it is about it, but like the actual fiber is kind of, it's tough on the mouth.
I'm trying to remember the last time I had a fresh pineapple. I don't think so, but.
You don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't think so.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're listening and if you have to moderate the amount of pineapple that you eat because it blisters up the inside of your mouth, let me know, because that happens to me.
I think pineapple juice is one of the best ways to consume pineapple. Yeah, it's delicious.
Good.
And this
you think like you got a pina colada or something, right?
Right, yeah. And this beer had a ton of just distinct pineapple vibes going on. It's definitely the most pineapple-y beer I've ever had in my life. But our friend John, who's the brewer over there, he and owner of Little Cottage Brewing, he has a knack for making just ridiculously interesting beers that are a little off the beaten path, but that anybody can enjoy, I think. And so, yeah, this beer in particular is like one of the best representations of how far in a particular direction he can go. He can get crazy with it, but still make it an excellent final product.
Oh, absolutely.
So
yeah.
Anybody who's in Atlanta and hasn't been to Little Cottage, you got to go.
Absolutely. It's. I mean, we've got a couple of favorite breweries in here in Atlanta, but he's tied for first. I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's the perfect amount of sweetness. There's like a touch of tartness with this being a sour ale. But I was curious if you're going to note how sweet it was, because I felt like it was kind of pushing the envelope as far as how sweet you like your beers. I thought it was perfect. Nice amount of sweetness with a touch of tartness going
on. Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I know. I agree. And yeah, it's definitely on, you know, higher on the sweet scale, but because it was like had a depth of juiciness to it, it kind of, I was cool with it.
It had the fruit to back it.
Yes,
for
exactly.
Sure. Well, dude, cool. I'm glad you and I got to share this beer on the episode. Yeah, like Joel mentioned, everyone check out Little Cottage Brewery if you are going through Atlanta or if you live here. And we will make sure to have our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com, and we'll link to any of the resources that we mentioned during this episode.
No doubt. By the way, if you haven't joined our Facebook group, it is a pleasant place where people help each other with their money questions. We'd encourage you to go over to facebook.com, type in How to Money in the search line. I promise this is not a scam. It is just a truly good online resource where people can ask each other questions and receive help. So yeah, feel free to check that out. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.